Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. Well, we kind of covered a lot of different things this week, all circling around Republic Review, and we also had a very good discussion with the good doctor regarding the militia, the Civil War, and even sovereign citizens and corporations and so forth. And we'll see if the good doctor wants to expand his his repertoire and or his profuse catalog in writing on the Constitution and take on that that perspective of the Civil War and the migration, or I should say the transforming of the United States government into corporations. All unconstitutional, by the way. Anybody that is warned, or I should say concerned and is being warned, hey, this is a real problem. Yeah, it's a real problem. It's a real problem just like all the other unconstitutional violations that the federal government has been engaged in. Absolutely. But it's unconstitutional. Republic Review will force that fix. So anyway, you are listening to the only show that actually gets into the meat of what has to happen. And the solution is really isn't that difficult. When I start working with people that even that have a a profuse understanding, like the good doctor, I mean, he understands that Republic Review will actually undo a lot of things that he kind of likes. And so, you know, like funding for education and so forth. So bottom line, you know, people have to make a decision whether they want to support it or not. But at the end of the day, because some people don't like hearing that statement at the end of the day, so I might as well do it. So at the end of the day, I believe that when people actually look at the outcome and the process and everything else, we are far better off obtaining compliance of the Constitution and then figuring out if in today's society there are some deficiencies or things that really would require making modifications. I'm not advocating, and nor will I advocate, you know, amendments. We've got to amend the Constitution. But I believe that we're now in the 21st century. We have technology and so forth. I don't believe we need to have Congress sitting, you know, thousands of miles away from their constituents on a daily basis. I believe the corporations recognize the need for telecommuting and so forth. So why aren't our congressmen far more available to their constituents? If it's a matter of security, then they could at least park their butts at the state capitol and build little satellite buildings so that they can all kind of meet together and work together in, you know, in telecommuting and so forth. And then if you want to see them, you can, you know, get your butt in your car and drive up there and see them. Now, this actually starts creating a very good argument on large states. You have to understand that the whole concept was that it should be a reasonable thing for you to be able to get to your seat of government within a day's travel. In today's society, a day's travel is a considerable burden because you have to take off from work and so forth. Back in those days, it was an agrarian society. Once you got all the crops planted and, you know, you're going to let the rain and everything do its work, you just kind of mosey off to government for a couple of weeks and then come back. Well, most people living today in the hectics, you know, or the chaos of society where both parents have to work, and it, you know, the cost of living is so high that it's really hard to take that time off just to go meet with and to go express your concerns with your representative. So there's merit in looking at splitting states that are too big, like California, Texas, maybe even Alaska. You should be able to have a reasonable amount of time to meet with your representative. Either that, or we move these satellites out to where if it's so far, so many miles, then they have to set up a satellite to accommodate the people in the south of California and the north of California and so forth. That way, we at least have access to those people who are what? Our representatives. Do you really believe you're being represented by your representative? I don't. I know I'm not. Kathy McMorris Rogers is my representative, and I'm telling you, she does not represent me. And that kind of becomes obvious in my last briefing. And bottom line, I don't believe she represents the majority of her constituents, because a majority of her constituents love the Constitution and do not like seeing it being violated. They may not understand just how violated it is being, or, you know, just how bad it is and what she's doing and how wrong it is. But bottom line, I believe that most everybody feels that she needs to be doing a much better job in representing them and the Constitution, protecting their liberties and so forth. So anyway, I'm waiting to hear back from the doctor. Hope to be able to get engaged with him very soon. Want to talk to him about the Convention of States and those types of things. And I also want to get into some marketing. Now, I've got some stuff I wanted to go through with you today. So we will see. We're going to put the marketing off, but some of this marketing stuff is really good. We have a segment on climatology. We'll start it off with some gospel music for the climatology folks out there that find this new religion so invigorating. So anyway, let me just dive forward real quick, because I haven't done any groveling in a while. And as you know, one of the ways you can actually support this show is by supporting our sponsor. And our primary sponsor, and actually only sponsor, is Red State Coffee. If you drink coffee, get your grinds on, get your whole beans on, and you go and give us a call, 425-270-5416, and let us know how you like that coffee. That is one way you can actually support this show. We need your help, and financially, that's one of the ways you can help us, by actually consuming a product that actually is a good quality product, and you're going to be supporting the show. I will also tell you that we have the crowdfunding out there on GoFundMe, and there are other ways you can support, not just financially. If you have the time, you've got a computer, you've got a phone, you got some literacy with those devices, then by all means, send us an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. We would be happy to engage you in the effort. If you want to get involved and become a leader in your county and state, this is the best way to do it, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. Two other ways you can get involved, and these are two organizations I support. The Constitution Club, you know I've been supporting them for a long time. Get involved with them, Keith Borders. And when you go log in, you can actually start finding people. It's a great way of networking with people within your state and county. And that is the constitutionclub.ning.com. constitutionclub.ning.com. The other organization is Our First Right. They're trying to do one thing and one thing only: pass the amendment that Madison left, and it's still sitting on the table. It doesn't expire. And we want to get enough states to pass this so we can actually force better representation. If we go down this path and get this amendment passed, that means that there'll be 6,000 representatives in the House, where you'll actually have somebody that's representing you, because it limits the amount of people that they can represent is no greater than 50,000. And right now it's almost 1 million. How can a person actually represent 1 million people? You walk up, oh, hey, how are you doing? Unless they're using a computer and they're using artificial intelligence. And we definitely don't want a computer and artificial intelligence representing us. So get involved with ourfirstright.org. They're the people that are behind this. They're the people that are trying to drive this whole concept. So there you go. Now, what are you doing for Constitution Day? Let us know. We'll be happy to plug it. I know it's still a couple months out, but if you're doing something, let us know. And I've already given you some recommendations. Go to an American car dealership and talk to them about, you know, giving away a free Constitution for anybody that comes down to the dealership for the week. And there you go. It helps them stimulate business, but it also puts a Constitution in the people's hands. I also want to thank you, and I haven't done this in a little while, maybe once this week, but I want to thank you for tuning in. This is the only way that people are going to be able to start understanding, digesting, and looking at the broader picture of why, you know, we have to get the Constitution, or I should say the federal government, back into the framework and following and complying to that Constitution. Because almost every single one of our problems spawns from their noncompliance to the Constitution. And as I always look every week, I check and scour the news every day when I do this show, excuse me, and there is no sign that the federal government is going to disband any of its tyrannical roles, responsibilities, and powers. So what that means is you and I are going to have to take up arms. And when I say take up arms, I don't mean actual, you know, weapons other than the Constitution. And we have to start getting people on board, understanding that the Constitution gives us all of the weapons necessary, all the tools necessary in getting the federal government back into compliance. And so with that, let me kind of jump in. I know I've only got less than a minute, actually less than half a minute. Rising tensions in the geopolitical arena is starting to make people, everybody's getting focused on what's going on with Iran. We're going to go to war. Neocons, war hawks. I'm telling you, these problems have persisted and they will always persist as long as there are despots out there ruling people and enslaving people, such as the Islamic Republic of Iran. And so, when we come back, we will kind of end our thoughts on this, and then we'll get into what I hope will give you some content for some clarity. So we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. Let me be a little more forthright, a little more clearer. You know, tensions with Iran, tensions with Russia, tensions with China, geopolitical tensions. There is always the ramification of military actions and so forth. I understand that these aren't just like the Mueller report that is just, you know, a bunch of political posturing and so forth. So I can understand that we, get concerned, you know, kind of start getting, you know, worried. And the reason why there's so many young kids in the Libertarian Party is because they are afraid of war. We've raised a nation of chickens. And so they don't understand the importance and the responsibility of guarding liberty. And we have literally a nation of young men and women who are willing to surrender their liberty just so they don't have to fight because they don't want to get hurt or whatever. And that's a sad day. It's an indictment to say that we have lost our moral compass on understanding the importance of liberty and what it takes to guard it. And that's what you see the majority of the Libertarian and even on the Democratic Party side. I think that is one of the biggest emotional drivers for these kids that go, I don't want to go to war. Unlike, you know, the Greatest Generation, even Vietnam and so forth, where, you know, people still went and did their duty, even though it required a draft. But if you notice, there were lots of people that willingly just enrolled to join the Marine Corps, Army, Navy, or what have you after 9/11 and so forth. So with that, let me just put this point to bed, that those issues, there's nothing we can do about it. Until you're in a position, I mean, we can't second guess. We can't do armchair quarterbacking. I mean, we can allow the facts to come out. But bottom line, do not believe that Iran is a good player and that they're not enslaving their people and they're not behaving badly. The same thing with Russia, China, and so forth. These are evil players. There's nobody in the world that deserves to be living in China. There's nobody in the world that deserves to be living in Iran. Russia, at least people can leave and, you know, freely come and go to some extent, far more than China and Iran, especially North Korea. That's probably the worst. And so the point is that there's not much we can do about it, but don't start thinking and don't start allowing yourself to be persuaded that we have no business being there. Now, I will say this, if we start running carriers or anything to, you know, to protect the commerce of oil and so forth, whoever is operating those ships need to be paying for those naval operations, period. Everybody that is moving oil through the Straits of Hormuz, because I don't think we get any oil out of there ourselves anymore. So whoever is running the oil, I mean, Trump promised this. Let's go. Let's hold his feet to the fire. If you're running oil through the Straits of Hormuz, then you have to pay for the, you know, the U.S. Or if not, then run it on your own and we'll just let Iran know, hey, this ship is not protected by us. By all means, go for it. Right? And that kind of seems bad or underhanded. But the fact of the matter is it costs money to keep the sea lanes open. And I've been a huge advocate that America needs to pay the price to maintain a free-flowing commerce throughout the world, and commerce flows across the oceans. So the bottom line is that the world is benefiting from that. They should be equally paying because the world equally benefits as well. And they have to be very happy that it is not Iran or it is not North Korea or China or even the Soviet Union that are the police cops of the world, because life would be a lot different then, because we understand the despotism that comes from those types of states, that those types of theocracies and despotic communistic dictatorships and so forth. I mean, look at Putin. Yeah, he's a nice guy, isn't he? Yeah, isn't that good? So let me kind of get into what I wanted to do for a good part of the show. Hopefully we can get it done today. But I wanted to kind of give you the clarity as to what our threats are and what our problems are, and try to help you separate threats and problems, okay? So if you understand what a threat is something that is already there and so forth. I mean, so the state welfare, corporate welfare, that is a threat because it is bleeding us financially. Education, it is literally indoctrinating anti-constitutional automatons who are out there to literally just go, I want to give up my freedom. I will vote for communism. Or the dark state, deep state, the EPA, FBI, BLM, Department of Energy, Department of Justice, All of these people look at as problems, but these are all threats. Just like abortion is a threat, right? HUD, these are all threats to our liberty. And so as I kind of lay all these things out here, every single one of these threats have one thing in common. They are all violations of the Constitution, all of them. There has been no amendment to grant the federal government the ability to create any type of policing state or what I call a standing army, such as the FBI or the DOJ or, let's say, the IRS. You have to understand the Constitution was very clear. The people that were supposed to enforce the Constitution were the militias. And don't you think you'd be better served by having state, you know, people you know that are a part of the militia that have to go out and enforce constitutional laws? There, it was the providence and the divine wisdom of the divine hand of providence, our creator, in inspiring such a system. There's no doubt he knew, yeah, I'm using gender, he knew that by using local resources, local people, they would know the people that they would have to levy types of despotic government or what have you. And so when they started doing the tax on whiskey, that was done by the militia. It was not done by, you know, some bureaucratic thug a couple thousand miles away that just come in to do their job and they, you know, they just sit around. That's what we have now. We literally have standing armies. And so all of these things that they've created are all threats to our liberty. Some of them are absolutely grave peril. We're under grave peril of losing our Constitution from going financially broke or allowing the education system to continue indoctrinating kids into getting them to surrender their liberties. That should never be happening. So these are all the threats. And they all have one thing in common. They're violating the Constitution. The federal government is not in compliance. So our greatest threat to our republic are not these symptoms, because that's all they are. Education, DOJ, FBI, EPA, all those are just symptoms to non-compliance. The real threat that we're all facing can be boiled into one threat: non-compliance to the Constitution. It can't get any clearer than that. Okay? And so if you start understanding Republic Review is the process of enforcement. It is not the process of talking about the Constitution to change it, amending the Constitution. It is going through the Constitution to say, where did we give you this power? Where did we give you this power? So forth and so on. Clearly, go online. I clearly put it out there that when a state initiates Republic Review, it has dug its heels in to say, you're not getting any amendments until you start complying to this Constitution. Once you get 13 states committed to the Republic Review, then you've killed any ability of the Convention of States to even operate. Because you have 13 states that say, give us an amendment, we will deny it, we will let it just, we'll burn it. We're not considering amendments, any type of amendments, only compliance. And until we get the federal government into compliance, then, you know, we're done. We're done talking here. And so what we'll find is that other states will actually recognize this. They'll jump on board. They go, wow, what a great alternative. We don't even have to consider amending any of the constitutional things. What we have to do is actually get the federal government to give us our powers back. They had no authority to take them. So if you get this whole thing on the threat is really noncompliance. So what is our biggest problem in succeeding? Now, this is where it starts hurting the head. Because if we go down this path of what's our really biggest problem, is it's obviously political. And so most people go, oh, it's the establishment. Well, so what is the establishment? The establishment is probably a lot of conservatives that think, oh, as long as we're controlled, you know, that's the better way to do it. Remember, I believe reasonable people equally informed seldom disagree. And I believe most people are reasonable. And once they realize that what they're doing is wrong, and once they realize that, you know, Only those maniacal people that have their fingers close to the ring of power to be able to put that thing on and become the wield, you know, they'd be able to wield all the power of the republic. You know, I'm going to be the next president or despot. You know, those people are far and few between. You know, you got the fringe elements and so forth, but most people I really believe are reasonable. And I believe that most people that are in the establishment, because the establishment is obviously a problem. It is a fact. Well, it's a faction, and all of these things are factions. Conservative organizations are factions. As a matter of fact, the John Birch Society is a faction. Same thing with the Eagle Forum. It's a faction. And so there are lots of factions out there, and even the liberal movements within the Republicans, like the the Log Cabin Republicans, that is a faction. Racial gender movements or organizations within the Republican Party, those are factions. And so when we come back, we'll start talking about factions, the problems, and how to solve these things. But we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcasts and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so as we were going into break, I started listing some factions. The establishment Republicans. They are a part of... They don't know, a lot of people don't know that they're just a part of the deep state, a part of the uniparty. And when people start waking up, they go, I don't want to be a part of this. This is all about control. And this is all sending us in the wrong direction. I believe most people that are working in the establishment, when they start realizing and they start smelling the actual stench that is coming from the uniparty and how it is just imbued within the establishment, then we'll find that most of these people will be willing to turn away from that. Same thing with these different conservative, these ultra-conservative groups, like I said, the John Birch Society and so forth, or even these liberal movements. But the bottom line is this, it's about compliance. Now, most people supposedly in the log cabin Republicans, you know, believe in individual liberty, but they want one thing, and they want the federal government to dictate that homosexual marriage is okay and mandate. In other words, they're looking for big government. They're looking for big government solutions. The same thing with the conservative organizations. They're looking kind of for big government solutions unless they're embracing Republic Review, because Republic Review restores all the domestic, all these things that are unconstitutional from the Energy Department, from housing, welfare, health care. All of these things have to go back to the states. These are state powers. The federal government has no responsibility to doing any of these things. And so it restores the, I'll call them localized powers. It restores states' rights and states' powers and puts the federal government back into the framework of operating within the Constitution and only the Constitution and having them outward looking, looking at foreign affairs, looking at, you know, national security, those types of things. And so bottom line, if you really start putting this all together, factions are the biggest part of the problem. They're a huge part of the problem because why? Factions are divisive, or divisive, I should say, divisive. They're divisive. And so when you have things that are divisive, then what happens to that old adage, united we stand, divided we fall? Well, we're already divided because we're divided on all sorts of little myopic issues. It's about abortion. No, it's about education. It's about compliance. And if you understand what I just did, I gave you these personal myopic things, but everything falls under compliance again. If we shift the focus from the myopic to the macro, which is compliance, then we actually are able to unite. This is a very dangerous message because they do not want us uniting. What they want is to keep us divided on these little principles of we've got to restore Christianity. No, we can't restore Christianity. That is a process that has to be left to, you know, the states and so forth, and how they're going to restore all of these other roles, responsibilities, and powers that they are supposed to hold. But bottom line, the federal government has no authority to dictate and to mandate all of these things. Okay? So as we look at problem number two, the second problem, the biggest problem, again, our primary problem is divisiveness. The John Birch Society, as I'm going to plug at them because, you know, as you know, they've kind of poked me, so I'm going to poke them. And so if you look, they want to have a full control of the narrative. They refuse to actually, you know, bring their scholars to, you know, come discuss with me and show me how I am wrong or anything like that. Maybe they know they can't beat me when it comes down to the academic argument, because it is that simple and it is that moot. But what they can do is they can, and I say this in my book, people can easily find faults in, you know, in me, but not in the theory that the states possess all the power necessary to fix this problem. All they've got to do is stand up, assert their authority, and demand compliance. And once we have enough states with political pressure to do this, boom, it's done. But anyway, let me get back to the problem, though. The second problem is the party itself by design. If you look at the parties by design, they are a laissez-faire design. And it's the laissez-faire design that allows people like Teddy Roosevelt, Hoover, even Eisenhower, who gave us the Department of Education, Welfare, and what was the other one? Hugh. Healthcare, Education, and Welfare. That was the Department of Hugh. Nixon did all sorts of terrible things. You know, I'm jumping over the Democrats. I'm just talking about the party now, right? Ford? Terrible. The Bushes? Terrible. Even McCain was a terrible example, and he besmirched the brand of the Republican Party. We can't allow that. And as I look at my representatives, one of them being a Republican is a terrible example. They are not supporting the Constitution. So let me put this into a clear perspective. Leaders build on core principles to unite others and solve problems. So what happens when an organization chooses to attack an individual like myself and, you know, create question as to the infancy of my concept of Republic Review? Because when it was written in my book, it was definitely an infant and it had not evolved. And obviously, I've given the John Birch Society credit where, you know, they have said, hey, we see this, we see this, we see this. And I go, well, that's easy to fix. You know, these are, you need to do this, this, and this. Those problems are gone. Now what? Oh, well, what about this? And that's not even a problem anymore because you can do this. And I am telling you that they stopped talking to me about the actual process anymore because it's I honestly believe it's airtight. There's very little nuances. The Wyoming GOP asked me to get rid of mentioning the Article 5 process. Instead, they said the amendment process. And the reason why is because most people will go into, you know, people that are hypersensitive to the convention and the Article 5 convention, they see that, that's a convention. Oh! And we're killing ourselves with political correctness because people can't look at the word, look at how it's in context and go, oh, okay, well, that's not that. I was jumping to conclusions. How overly emotional of me to do that. I mean, there you go, folks, because people are way over emotional and over hypersensitive. We cannot pander to those people. The best thing for those people to go, oh, look, you're not being sensitive to this word. What we have to do with those folks is, I'm sorry, but we have to kind of shame them to go, come on, get over it. Is it in context to what you're making it out to be? No, it's not. So what's your problem? Don't tell me not to use words. And it really bothers me that I can't say the word convention because the John Birch Society or other people just go, oh, that's wrong. You're using that word. That means a bad thing. No. Conventions are used in engineering and manufacturing. It's a methodology. It's a process. That's what it is. Anyway, so if you understand that leaders unite on core principles to solve problems, then managers only manage agendas. And everybody's a manager. We all perform management responsibilities. If you drive a car, you are a manager in traffic. You manage the traffic, you manage the vehicle and the safety of getting that vehicle from point A to point B, right? I mean, you're not leading. You're not just making your own lanes and cutting across, you know, not abiding by the laws and processes of traffic. You have to manage that. Right? And so we're all managers. Everybody is involved in management roles throughout their daily routine. But very few times when people actually recognize the opportunity to stand up and say, we've got to start, you know, uniting because we are literally at the precipice. How many people, if the John Birch Society understood that we're at the precipice, why aren't they leading instead of managing their agenda? If some of these organizations actually believed in leading, then why is it that they're not leading? What they're doing is they're defending and managing the status quo. And I don't understand this. Folks, we have 5 years, 5 years to stop the direction we're going in and turning it around, and we can do it. All we need in 2021 is to get one state, one David, to stand up and call upon the other Davids in the Republic to join them. And I'm telling you, this is the miracle. There's no doubt. I believe the Lord will bless us in everything we need to make these things happen because it's not about the salvation of people. It's about maintaining and preserving their liberty so that they can be saved. I try to tell this to Christians. They go, you know, how come you don't, you know, emphasize on preaching gospel doctrines and so forth? And I go, there's no better gospel doctrine than liberty. You have to individually choose for yourself to be able to do what's right and wrong. And then you make the decisions. But when we lose those things, when we lose our liberty, then it is all gone. And you got to understand that. That's why this is so critically important. So now it comes down time to actually talking about the elephant in the room. Because now we understand leadership and management. The real question is, who is leading and who isn't? And I will tell you that if you have a political, you know, representative that's telling you things that, you know, I'm working for you, they're managing an agenda. Leaders in politics support the Constitution, period. That's it. And in supporting the Constitution, they are fighting for your liberties. They're not trying to bring money home for some person that gave them great contributions to get them elected. To me, that's payola. That is not fighting for your liberties. And so if you can start garnering this, then you can understand how bad it is politically and how easy it is to take the system back. We'll be right back after this.
Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue, to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
And so I'm hoping that makes sense to you folks, because if they're guarding the Constitution, if they're supporting every facet of the Constitution, they're guarding your liberties. Again, the core principles of guarding and supporting the Constitution applies at all levels, and it applies at the party levels as well. Party leaders at the county as well as the state should be supporting the Constitution, not agendas. An agenda is trying to go after a particular, you know, like we believe in, you know, religious freedom, and we want to make sure that, you know, we can have a nativity scene. That's an agenda. The federal government has no responsibility, and they have no power to silence a religious expression. It's the same thing with the state government. 14th Amendment demands individual privileges and immunities be protected from the states as well as local governments. And so why would you go after one myopic thing when all these other things, whether it be abortion or what have you, all of these other things are all covered under the fact of compliance to the Constitution? Why waste your time on a myopic issue and let everything else fall to tyranny? Because I'm here to tell you that the myopic issue, you're going to lose. Because what happens is you go into court, and in going into court with a court that doesn't have jurisdiction over these very specific things, then when you're standing in their court without jurisdiction, you've already surrendered to them. So the question you have to start asking, are the leaders of the county, the leaders of the state, are they leading or are they managing agendas? And it falls out this easily. Is what they're doing supporting the Constitution? If it's not, supporting and or defending and or obeying the Constitution. If it's not, my friends, guess what? They're managing. So we are, and where we are with Republic Review, as you know, is, you know, we're spreading. This message is getting, we've got some people working in different states. And this is really good. But the question is, you know, who is not on board with this? And what do we need to do to get them there? All, and that's all, capital A, capital L, capital L. All must put aside our differences. We all have to do this. We have to put aside our differences as well as our self-interests. I don't care if your organization becomes obsolete because we've saved society. Don't you get it? We're saving society, not an organization. That means that you're managing an agenda of maintaining relevance for an organization. And that's why, you know, I get it, why some people won't support this. But let's call a spade here, folks. If the John Birch Society doesn't want to get on board because they recognize they're going to lose relevance, because what do they have to complain about if the federal government is in full compliance with the Constitution? Then what? Well, they lose a lot of their argument and they lose a lot of wind. But not necessarily any organization can refocus their energies instead of managing and leading. And what they can do is they can start leading the charge in helping us find a better path forward into the 22nd century. That's what we're facing right now. We're in the 21st. We're heading into the 22nd. Why are we not looking at how we can improve, like the telecommuting idea, getting Congress out of the D.C. swamp and getting them back home to you? These are things that they can do. That's what leaders do. Leaders try to solve problems by uniting people on the core principles. It's not that hard. Anyway, we all have to address the elephant in the room. And at a high level, some of these things that, you know, to do this at the party level really, you know, just requires a few things, like changing the party bylaws. Now, when we're focused on the party, now that's what I want to really focus on here, is you have to start understanding that you as a party, if you're the Tennessee party, the grand old party of Tennessee, which is the Republican Party, then you have to get them to change their bylaws so that the Republican Party brand is protected, that anybody that is considers themselves a Republican and uses that name next to theirs, that little R next to theirs, means that they have to comply with very specific standards. And see, if you start understanding where we're going with this, it's the same thing. You're protecting a brand. The party with this laissez-faire design, they had no controls over their brand. Yo, well, as long as you're Republican, we're okay. And then John McCain goes in and puts his thumb down on Trump's, you know, trying to do with healthcare. What? Oh, but he's a maverick. No, we have expectations as a party that you actually support the Constitution. You should have repealed Obamacare, period. Not replaced it, repealed it. Send it back to the states and give the states their power back. It's that simple. McCain, senators, representatives in Congress, it's that simple. Abide by the Constitution and give the states their power back. And see, when you start levying these requirements, this brand requires that you apply and maintain supporting, defending the Constitution. Then people start getting it. Another thing that has to be done at a high level is the party itself has to split its platform. If you understand that there are two different forms of government within this hybrid constitutional republic, one is the enumerated powers given to the federal government. So the national platform has to basically state that the federal government is enumerated with these powers and these are the only things that they can exercise. Then everybody's well aware of the limitations of the federal government. So if all of a sudden we're having a conversation of the federal government getting involved in education, then we go, hold it. That's not an enumerated power. They have no business doing that. That needs to be shut down. Now everybody starts understanding this. Okay. So by splitting the platform, you actually can start sending shots across the bow to the RNC to say, hey, look, the federal government's out of compliance, and we need them to be compliant because they're causing all the problems by failing to comply to the Constitution. And then the other platform would be for the state platform. How is the state's constitution? And it should be matching the state constitution. If you believe that there should be some moral high ground and, you know, making abortion illegal because of something like that, then you have to basically go down the path of amending the constitution of your state to do those types of things. And you'll be surprised how many things the state is doing that is not within their constitution and how many things that they should be doing that is in their constitution. And then you have to wonder, well, what the heck's going on here? And that's because nobody understands the Constitution. It's a contract, my friends. It's pretty simple. And if they're not abiding by the contract, that means they're breaking the tenets of the contract itself, which means they're violating it. And that means that they should be charged for treason or at least removed from office. That's Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, folks. We talk about it a lot here. So as I said, you have these two platforms. The other thing that you also have to do in managing your political resources, your politicians, they need to not only take oaths, because that's a mandated thing. Back in the days of the writing of the Constitution, people actually took their oath seriously. Their honor and integrity was guarded by their life. They would rather fight a duel than have their name besmirched. Well, nowadays it's a lot different. People don't mind lying. They have no compulsion with lying. So we need politicians to start signing pledges. And in that pledge, they have to sign the fact that they will resign if they violate the Constitution. That's pure and simple, folks. They need to state that they will resign. If they don't resign, then the party needs to go after them. They need to strip the party moniker. And then at the end of their term and what have you, if we can't get them out in beforehand, then bottom line, they should not be allowed to wear the party name because they have failed to meet the expectations of the party. And those expectations would be supporting and complying to the Constitution. And I get it. There may be some gray area, but okay, then if it's gray area, then we have to tighten those things down. But I don't think there's much gray here. I really don't. And I think that most people are just trying to split hairs or, you know, play with semantics. It's not there. It is not there. So as we move forward in trying to get these guys to, you know, sign these pledges and so forth, another factor is education. We need to use education and develop the party members and public servants regarding compliance standards. You know, nurses and all sorts of professions have to have continuing education. I've said this before, and actually Keith Broders put it in this manner. You have to have a license for a dog, a cat, or any type of pet. You have to have a license to put flowers in an arrangement in many states because, you know, that's really important. It's very, very important, but we don't have any importance to what it takes to be a sovereign or a legislator or a public servant. Maybe we should have licenses. Maybe we should be requiring education. Why not? We require plumbers and electricians to be educated and have an understanding of the codes and so forth. How come our politicians have no clue about the Constitution? That is just unconscionable as far as I'm concerned. So we have to start setting strict expectations with public servants. This is only reasonable, folks. If they can use the reasonable argument of setting licenses and standards for professions and everything else, and they apply them in your state, then they're hypocrites for not having their own self-applied standards. And those standards should be based on one thing and one thing alone, the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the state. They have to understand those things if they're going to govern. If not, they are tyrants, and we have to call them out for that. We've got more. I didn't get into the marketing, so we'll cover the last of this in our next show, as well as the marketing. So God bless, and we'll be back. Oh, by the way, I'm G.R. Mobley. I'm Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.